pastor, author, and Bible teacher, Alan Wright.
There's something in our nature, in the design that God has made us in His own image, that we are just at our best when we give, and we're actually at our happiest when we can give something. And even though we're marred and broken by sin in this world, have you ever noticed that most people, unless they just have a totally seared conscience and horrible heart, you know, most people like to give you directions if you ask them. Have you ever noticed that?
That's Pastor Alan Wright. Welcome to another message of good news that will help you see your life in a whole new light. I'm Daniel Britt, excited for you to hear the teaching today in the series titled God Used Who? And you may just be surprised, as presented at Renolda Church in North Carolina. If you're not able to stay with us throughout the entire program, I want to make sure you know how to get our special resource right now. It can be yours for your donation this month to Alan Wright Ministries. As you listen to today's message, go deeper as we send you today's special offer. Contact us at PastorAlan.org or call 877-544-4860. That's 877-544-4860. More on that later in the program. But now, let's get started with today's teaching. Here is Alan Wright.
Are you ready for some good news? The gospel is simple. It's not complicated. It's deep, but it's not complicated. The gospel is free. Not partially free, utterly free. So free that our inability to believe how free it is one of our greatest obstacles in growth. And the gospel is powerful. And God can use anyone at any time, in any place, to point people to this beautiful gospel of Jesus Christ. We're looking at a hidden jewel today, an unnamed, unheralded little girl, Naaman's servant girl. The story is in 2 Kings chapter 5. 2 Kings chapter 5 tells the story of a great military commander who is healed miraculously of his leprous condition. And where our thoughts center today, as we're thinking about hidden jewels, these unheralded women in the Word, is that we're going to focus our attention on how God uses this little servant girl. And like other great Old Testament stories, we really need to make our way through this whole chapter to be able to grasp the narrative and see what's going on here. It is a fascinating, amazing story and can be seen on many, many different levels. 2 Kings chapter 5. Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and in high favor, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was a mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. Let me pause here, as I'll do as we read, to make some comments along the way. So Naaman is probably number two in command in Syria, ancient Aram, the Aramean people. And he is described here as someone who's exceedingly powerful and probably is not only like military commander, but sort of like prime minister in the land. And everything is wonderful for him, except he has leprosy. And in the Old Testament, leprosy is actually a word that is used to describe a variety of skin diseases. So this is not necessarily Hansen's disease, the highly infectious condition that is known as leprosy, but it could be one of a variety of serious skin diseases. Obviously, he is still able to function and is obviously not quarantined, as was often the case with those with Hansen's disease. Verse 2. Now the Syrians, on one of their raids, had carried off a little girl from the land of Israel, and she worked in the service of Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "Would that my lord were with the prophet who's in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy. So Naaman went in and told his lord, told the king, thus and so spoke the girl from the land of Israel. And the king of Syria said, go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel. So he went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. By the way, scholars have spent much time trying to identify just how wealthy was Naaman and how much had he taken with him. And it's hard to wrap your mind around this exactly with any precision, but the bottom line is he was enormously wealthy, and what he had taken with him, some would say, could be the equivalent of the wealth in all of Samaria and all of the northern kingdom of Israel. So he travels with all this wealth. In verse 6, he brought the letter to the king of Israel. And this was one of the kings during the time of the divided monarchy. And he brought the letter to him, which read, verse 6, when this letter reaches you, know that I have sent to you Naaman, my servant, that you may cure him of his leprosy. And when the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, am I God to kill and make alive that this man sends word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? Only consider it and see how he is seeking a quarrel with me. So the king of Israel goes into great grief and angst because he assumes that the king of Syria, this very powerful nation, has established a sort of political ruse by which he wants to provoke reason to attack Israel. Because the king is going, I can't heal anybody. What is this all about? Verse 8. But when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that sign of angst and grief, he sent to the king, saying, why have you torn your clothes? Let him come now to me, that he may know that there's a prophet in Israel. So Naaman came with his horses and chariots and stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored, and you shall be clean. So Elisha didn't even go out and speak to him himself, just sent a messenger out there and said, go wash in the Jordan. Verse 11, but Naaman was angry and went away, saying, behold, I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call upon the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. But his servants came near and said to my father, that's a great word the prophet has spoken to you. Will you not do it? Has he actually said to you, wash and be clean? So he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. So Naaman was all angry about this and thought it was beneath him, but his servants essentially were saying, if he'd asked you to do something fancy and great or pay a great sum, you would have done it. But he's given you something very simple to do. Why not do the simpler thing? And so he does. And he is utterly healed. Verse 15. Then he returned to the man of God, he and all his company. And he came and he stood before him. And he said, behold, I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. And this is an astounding confession of faith of a converted man who was second in rulership in Syria, a pagan nation, who has come to faith in the true living God. So, he said, second half of verse 15, accept now a present from your servant. But he said, as the Lord lives, before whom I stand, Elisha said, I'll receive none. And he urged him to take it. Naaman begged him to take it, but Elisha refused. Verse 17, Naaman said, if not, please let there be given to your servant 2 mules load of earth. For now, from now on, your servant will not offer burnt offering or sacrifice to any god but the Lord. And we're not real sure why he wanted to take this dirt home with him. It's maybe kind of a keepsake, you know? You just got to remember, one of the things beautiful about this story, it's so real, is that this is a brand new believer. And he doesn't know what all to do. He's just been so touched. He's like, I want to take some of this. This is holy ground. I'm going to take some home with me. We don't really know for sure. But what he's saying is, I want to remember this because I'm never going to offer a sacrifice to a pagan deity again. There's only one God, and he's the one who's healed me. Wow.
That's Alan Wright. And we'll have more teaching in a moment from today's important series.
God's love. You've heard about it with your ears. You've believed it in your mind. Now experience it in your heart with Alan Wright's beloved book, Lover of My Soul. The Bible is a love story from beginning to end. You are the spiritual bride of Christ, the perfect bridegroom. The Bible tells about a God who has gone to unimaginable lengths to woo you, to win you, and to walk with you hand in hand. For any man who has fallen in love with a woman, you've tasted the sweetness of what God's love for you is like. For any woman who has searched for true love, what you long for can only be found fully in God. Gary Chapman, renowned author of the Five Love Languages, says, "The incredible reality that God pursues us in love comes to life in Lover of My Soul. Ancient biblical accounts explode in the heart. Accept Christ's proposal, enjoy his embrace, revel in his love. After all, it's a match made in heaven." It's Lover of My Soul by Alan Wright. The gospel is shared when you give to Alan Wright Ministries. This broadcast is only possible because of listener financial support. When you give today, we will send you today's special offer. We are happy to send this to you as our thanks from Alan Wright Ministries. Call us at 877-544-4860. That's 877-544-4860. Or come to our website, pastoralan.org.
Today's teaching now continues. Here once again is Alan Wright.
Verse 18, he continues this Naaman, the Syrian commander. He continued by saying, "In this matter, may the Lord pardon your servant. When my master goes into the house of Rimmon," who was sort of the Syrian version of the pagan deity Baal, "when my master goes into the house of Rimmon to worship there, leaning on my arm, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, when I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon your servant in this matter." And he said, Elijah said, "Go in peace." I'll explain that later. But when Naaman had gone from him a short distance, Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, "See, my master has spared this Naaman, the Syrian, in not accepting from his hand what he has brought. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and get something from him." So Gehazi followed Naaman, and when Naaman saw someone running after him, he got down from the chariot to meet him and said, "Is all well?" And he said, "All is well. My master has sent me to say, they have just now come to me from the hill. They have just now come to me from the hill country of Ephraim, two young men of the sons of the prophet. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of clothing." You're just making up a story and lying in order to get some financial gain. And Naaman said, "Be pleased to accept two talents." And he urged him and tied up two talents of silver and two bags with two changes of clothing, laid them on his two of his servants, and they carried them before Gehazi. And when he came to the hill, he took them from their hand and put them in the house. And he sent the men away, and they departed. Well, he went in and stood before his master. And Elisha said to him, "Where have you been, Gehazi?" And he said, "Your servant went nowhere." But he said to him, "Did not my heart go when the man turned from his chariot to meet you?" Elisha had seen the whole thing in the spirit, you see. "Was it a time to accept money and garments, olive orchards and vineyards, sheep and oxen, male servants and female servants? Therefore the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and to your descendants forever." So he went out from his presence a leper like snow. What a story. And it's a story of healing, but it's also a story, more importantly, even more dramatically, of unlikely conversion, of somebody you would have thought would have been the last person that would ever come to the knowledge of the one true living God, all because of that little girl. How do you get people to come to church? You know, we live in a culture now where It just happened so fast for all of us churchgoers. It just happened so fast. It just almost took our breath away and caught us by surprise that especially here in the southern part of the United States, you just kind of, most people my age and older just kind of grew up. Most people went to church. Not so anymore. A good majority of people don't go to church. And increasingly, for a lot of people in our culture, it's not even on their mind. How do you get people to go to church? One time there was a seminarian who was in a preaching class, and the professor was reviewing sermon titles. And he was talking about the importance of having a good sermon title, something catchy, you know, that makes people want to really listen to that sermon. So this one student had brought in a sermon title, and the professor said, no, this is not catchy. It's not, doesn't sound important. He said, try something else. So the student came back the next day, brought another sermon title. The professor said, no, I don't think that works either. He said, listen, think of it this way. Imagine you're the pastor of a church, and you've got a sign out front where every week you put the title of your sermon. Now imagine that a bus full of people pulls up and stops in front of your church and they read the sign of the title of that sermon. Think about what is something that would make them want to jump off that bus and just run in your church. So the student came back the next day with his new sermon title. It was called "There's a Bomb on Your Bus." You know, we don't want to trick people to come to church, so how are people going to come to church? Well, the answer is actually very, very simple. Tom Rainer, a church growth expert and author, has done a recent massive survey in which he found something quite startling, really, that 82% of people, unchurched people who were surveyed, said they were at least somewhat likely to say yes if a friend invited them to church. It's almost unbelievable, isn't it, really? But if you think about it, that's kind of why we do almost anything. A friend tells us about it, right? I mean, if a friend says, you know, he's a trusted friend, they say, we had a great meal at such and such restaurant last week, you're probably likely to try it out, right? If a good friend says, hey, I've heard this is a good movie, you want to go see it with me? Most people probably say yes. And basically, we shape so much of our lives around what our friends invite us into. And yet, Tom Rainer said, and this is maybe even more startling, that only about 2% of Christians ever really invite people to church. So this is not rocket scientist stuff, is it? If most people say, yeah, I'd probably go if a friend or a family member, somebody I really like and trust, invited me to church, I'd probably go. I'd probably give it a try. But very few people are doing that. How are we going to get people into church? Not by tricking them and not by saying there's a bomb on your bus, but by inviting them. At the center of this story today is this little girl. And she is amazing in the way that she so simply points this great commander to the Lord. And I want to kind of walk through the story and its principles with an eye on this little girl to be reminded how simple and how free and how powerful the gospel of Jesus Christ really is. The River Jordan was not magic. It was just a river, but it symbolized the grace of God, the river of the grace of God that we can point everybody towards. So simple. There's a contrast in the story between Naaman and this little girl that is very stark. She is an Israelite. He is a Syrian. She's a little girl. That's what the text calls her, a little girl. But the text calls Naaman a great man. She's a captive. He's a conqueror. She's a servant. He's a commander of armies. She's unknown and unnamed. His name is famous throughout Syria. She is poor and he is rich. And one of the things that's so shocking and beautiful about this story is that this little girl would want her captor let's put it plainly, the one who had enslaved her unjustly, the one who had raided Israel. And some scholars think, according to the way the Syrians would engage in battle, that there is a very reasonable chance that this little girl had seen her parents killed at the hands of the Syrians. And she was captured and taken back to be a servant. And Naaman was responsible for all of that. That she, away from her homeland, orphaned, hurting, mistreated, and enslaved, would want her captor to be blessed by her God. That's how the world's going to be changed. What love is this? A love for the enemy. It's startling. You'd think that she would be unquenchably embittered. And, you know, somebody in that position could almost be justified in just saying, I'm glad he's got leprosy. Hope he dies from it, you know. But she wasn't. She was so small, and she was so poor, and she was so seemingly helpless, and yet she had something of eternal value to give. So fun to give something valuable and precious away. Oh, to discover the meaning of Jesus' words, it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. It really is. There's something in our nature, in the design that God has made us in His own image, that we are just at our best when we give, and we're actually at our happiest when we can give something. And even though we're marred and broken by sin in this world, have you ever noticed that most people, unless they just have a totally seared conscience and horrible heart, you know, most people like to give you directions if you ask them. You've ever noticed that? Now, it's a little different now that we've got the GPS and we don't stop and ask for directions very much. Not that I myself ever needed directions, but have you ever noticed that?
Alan Wright. I sense a story coming on. We'll have to pick up with that on the next teaching. It is from the series God Used Who and the teaching on Deborah. Alan will be back in a moment with additional insight on this for your life and today's final word.
God's love. You've heard about it with your ears. You've believed it in your mind. Now experience it in your heart with Alan Wright's beloved book, Lover of My Soul. The Bible is a love story from beginning to end. You are the spiritual bride of Christ, the perfect bridegroom. The Bible tells about a God who has gone to unimaginable lengths to woo you, to win you, and to walk with you hand in hand. For any man who has fallen in love with a woman, you've tasted the sweetness of what God's love for you is like. For any woman who has searched for true love, what you long for can only be found fully in God. Gary Chapman, renowned author of the Five Love Languages, says, "The incredible reality that God pursues us in love comes to life in Lover of My Soul. Ancient biblical accounts explode in the heart. Accept Christ's proposal, enjoy His embrace, revel in His love. After all, it's a match made in heaven." It's Lover of My Soul by Alan Wright. The gospel is shared when you give to Alan Wright Ministries. This broadcast is only possible because of listener financial support. When you give today, we will send you today's special offer. We are happy to send this to you as our thanks from Alan Wright Ministries. Call us at 877-544-4860. That's 877-544-4860. Or come to our website, pastoralan.org.
Well, Alan, I don't know if you want to give us a sneak preview or maybe just answer this question. Are we going to find direction in our next teaching?
We're going to find direction, and it is a funny story of the time I was lost and needed some directions. A hilarious story, but we all need direction. Today's teaching, really, Daniel, in the end, what a contrast between this mighty, powerful General Naaman, who, in all his pride and bluster, gets upset at the simple command the prophet had given him, and how God uses this unnamed young servant girl that God puts on display His grace. You can't pay for healing. You can't buy salvation. Naaman can't earn it by being an important figure. The secret comes from a little girl, and it's all about grace. I think it's a word of hope and a word of healing for many.
Today's Good News message is a listener-supported production of Alan Wright Ministries.